Funding for Smart Talk is provided by Capital Blue Cross. For 80 years, Capital Blue Cross has offered products that provide peace of mind and promote good health, focused on creating a healthier future for our communities through innovations like its Capital Blue Health and Wellness Centers that provide in-person service and inspire healthy living. Capital Blue Cross is behind you for whatever lies ahead. More information is at capbluecross.com. Capital Blue Cross. Live fearless. Smart Talk is also supported by UPMC Pinnacle, who is studying a new surgical technique that allows surgeons to make repairs to the heart without having to open the chest cavity and while the heart is beating. Info at upmcpinnacle.com.
Welcome to Smart Talk. I'm Scott Lamar. About 168,000 Pennsylvanians have signed up for health care coverage under the Affordable Care Act in 2017. The last day to enroll for 2018 health care under the Affordable Care Act, or Obamacare, is next Friday, a week from tomorrow, December 15th. The enrollment period was cut in half under direction of the Trump administration earlier this year. Here to discuss changes to the ACA, enrollment trends in state, and answer your questions about enrollment is the state's acting insurance commissioner, Jessica Altman, and Lynn Keltz, who is a healthcare navigator. Welcome to the program.
Thank you, Scott.
If you have a question or a comment, here's your opportunity. 1-800-729-7532 or send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. All right, Commissioner Altman, let me start with that number. 168,000 people have signed up for health care so far this year. There's a little bit of confusion because this is for 2018.
Correct.
But it actually is being done in 2017.
Correct.
So with a week to go, 168,000 being signed up. How does that compare to other years?
Yeah, so the good news is compared to this time last year, we're running ahead. We have more people enrolled than we did at the very beginning of December last year. The bad news is open enrollment is half as long as it was last year. And so if we want to get up to the over 400,000 Pennsylvanians who were enrolled at the end of last year's open enrollment, we have a lot of work to do by the end of next week. And that's why we want to get out there and make sure that if folks aren't enrolling, it's not because they didn't know they had to, and really trying to get the word out. December 15th, next Friday, you have now a week and a half to really get out there, explore your options, and enroll in coverage.
Are there still people who don't know they only have until December 15th?
My guess is there are, yeah.
And even though, I mean, your department has been publicizing this, I know that there have been mobile units going around the state. In fact, one going, even today, going around the state to make sure that people get signed up. It's just that people, well, one thing we know, also know is the federal government cut back in publicizing. They cut funding for publicizing the open enrollment period. So even with all those things, there still are some people who don't know.
Yeah, you know, I think we have to recognize that in past years, the federal government played a significant role in marketing and outreach and trying to get people enrolled. The funding for that was cut 90% this year. We also used to have we still have a number of navigators, and we do have assistance available. The federal government did cut the navigator program almost in half. We did a little bit better here in Pennsylvania with the funding for our navigators, but we've seen reductions. And while we've tried to step in at the state level and do what we can, and there are many, many organizations, elected officials, providers who are dedicated to the cause of getting people enrolled and getting accurate information out there. My guess is there are still people who aren't sure what's going on, who aren't sure with all of the headlines in the news that the Affordable Care Act is still here, and that that means not only all of the benefits and protections that that law guarantees, the financial assistance that it makes available are here, but also still for this year, the requirement that an individual maintain health insurance coverage or potentially face a tax penalty is still here. So those are the messages we're trying to get out every which way we can. December 15th, ACA is still here. But, you know, obviously those who come to the enrollment events know that they need to be there. And so my guess is there are still those out there who don't know, and we're still trying to reach them, and we will still be trying to reach them until 11:59 p.m. on December 15th.
Lynn Keltz, you are a navigator and continue to be a navigator this year. So what are some of the questions that you heard this year, and some that are maybe different than in past years?
Well, we've had people get letters from their insurance companies that said they would be eligible for the same or similar plan, but for much more money. But those letters haven't taken into account the tax credits that people get. So when they come to us, they're very worried about not being able to pay for this insurance. But when we explore it with them, indeed, they are still eligible for tax cuts, and there is a plan that's available for them. Tax credits. I'm sorry, not tax cuts. That there
Don't worry,
is a plan.
I'm talking tax cuts later in the program.
Okay, we'll set it up. So they are very relieved to find out that there are affordable plans, and some people are actually paying less this year than they paid last year for plans, or may get the higher level plans. People call and say, "How could this be? That this gold plan, which will pay 80% of a person's total medical costs, is cheaper than this silver plan." But it's, I can't explain it. I just say that's what the Department of Insurance helped make happen this year, and it's very good for consumers.
You know, something that you just said, that people probably coming in and being worried when they have received these letters from their insurance companies. I wonder if there are people out there that once they hear that, say, "Well, you know what? I'm not going to get insurance this year. I'm going to pay the penalty because it will cost me less." I wonder if there are people who haven't pursued a plan because of receiving that letter or thinking that they're going to pay more.
I would imagine that there are people who haven't pursued it, particularly if they have never worked with a navigator and they don't know that we are available. People also are concerned because a lot of the health insurance companies have changed their networks of physicians in hospitals. So some people who always had a particular insurance and always had particular doctors in hospitals they could use are now finding that they can't do that because those providers are not in the insurer's network. That's causing a lot of angst.
Commissioner, when you were here, we had the two of you on the program when we started open enrollment the 1st of November. And you were talking about how that—I was about to call it a phenomena, but at least that there's a little bit of difference this year with some people who will be able to get a better plan and may not pay anything for it. So explain again how that happened.
Sure. So when we learned that President Trump was talking about no longer funding the cost-sharing reduction program, we thought very carefully about how we would account for that in the state to really mitigate the impact on Pennsylvanians of that decision. And to be clear, while the funding has ended, the payments are no longer being made by the federal government to insurance companies still have to require that benefit. So if in the past you've gotten help paying your deductible, your coinsurance, anything like that, that assistance is still available so long as you're still eligible based on your income. So what we did to account for that cost, it had to be built into rates. That was how insurance companies are now paying for that program, is by increasing the rates. But we had them increase it only for the silver plans sold on the marketplace, which, first of all, are the only plans that you can get that cost-sharing reduction benefit with. But second of all, they're the plans that financial assistance gets benchmark to. So when those plans get more expensive, the financial assistance you get to pay your monthly premium also gets larger. And because we only raise the cost of those plans, that means that gold plans, bronze plans are relatively cheaper. So basically the buying power of your tax credit has gotten greater. And we're seeing two things. One is some bronze plans for relatively lower income marketplace enrollees are available for $0 premium. And if you're worried about primarily that monthly cost, or you're making that equation between forgoing coverage and paying the penalty or not, that is absolutely better than paying a penalty and having no health insurance coverage. Now, those plans do come with higher deductibles, higher copays, so we always caution consumers about that. The gold plan, however, can be a great option, and in many cases, they are actually cheaper than a silver plan, and they come with lower deductibles, lower coinsurance, lower cost sharing. And so if that's available to you, if your tax credit allows you to pay for a significant portion of a gold plan, that's an opportunity that you may want to consider. And like Lynn was saying, we've seen in, you know, Philadelphia, one woman was able to reduce her monthly payment from $1,200 to $400. Another was paying $1,100 a month last year and got a gold plan instead of a silver for just $100 a month this year. So it really is different, and we're seeing consumers potentially get better deals because of the way we structured it.
And this is your opportunity, especially if you're someone who may be seeking health insurance, your opportunity to ask questions. Give us a call, 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. You can leave a question or a comment on WITF Facebook page. On Twitter, we are at SmartTalkWITF. Again, that phone number, 1-800-729-7532. Coming up a little bit later in the program, Pennsylvania U.S. Senator Bob Casey will be on talking about the tax overhaul plan. But, Commissioner, you just listed some real success stories, if you want to describe them that way. When we started this back, and I say we, when we all got together and talked about this on the 31st of October, just before the 1st of October, for open enrollment, the beginning of open enrollment, you know, we were hearing about rates going up an average of over 30% here in Pennsylvania. So even though, you know, there have been some people who have been able to get less expensive plans, I'm sure there are a lot of other people out there who are paying a lot more. Is that the case?
You know, it doesn't necessarily need to be, and here's why. So that statewide average increase, it encompasses all metal levels. It encompasses all plans on and off the marketplace. And so just because there's a statewide average of 30% increase does not mean every plan has gone up 30% increase. And perhaps more importantly, it doesn't factor in the financial assistance that people get, which is based on the income that you and your household have and the cost of that silver plan. And so for the 4 in 5 Pennsylvanians who are enrolled in the marketplace now and who are eligible for financial assistance, there by and large may be better options or similar options that you've seen the last year. It's actually the 1 in 5 Pennsylvanians who have been on the marketplace who are not eligible for financial assistance that I worry about, who face the full cost of that premium. Now, once again, gold, bronze, and platinum plans were available, have not gone up disproportionately like silver have. And we also worked with all of Pennsylvania's marketplace carriers, the 5 carriers that offer on the individual market, to offer plans sold only off of the exchange that don't have the cost of that cost-sharing reduction program built in. So for those who aren't going to be eligible for that benefit, they can go to off-marketplace. We have a website, pa.checkbook.org, where you can shop for those plans, and you may find a better option. But for many, many people, they're not going to see a 30% increase if they take the time to log back in, shop, explore their options, and see what's best for them.
Income is a big factor, correct?
It is.
Because I've heard,
yeah,
you know, the horror stories I've had when refer to them as horror stories. It's when, I don't know if we'd call it that donut or not, but someone who makes too much money to qualify, maybe self-employed, or, you know, even their employer not offering insurance. Those are the people that look at this and say, you know, my wife, my family, we're paying a huge amount of money and even have a high deductible. Those are the people who really are hurting from this, right?
Yeah, I couldn't agree with that more. And really, that's the conversation that I wish we were having right now about fixing our healthcare system and the problems in the individual market. How can we bring premiums down and better serve that population of people who are currently facing really a significant cost? And I recognize it is significant. So we have to talk about underlying healthcare costs. We've been a big supporter of some federal programs that can help account for the costs of the very small number of people who have very high cost healthcare needs that drive up the cost for everybody, to moderate premiums on average. So we've been looking for ways to do that, and we will continue to do so. But that is definitely the population who I worry about the most.
Lynn Keltz, as a navigator, we have a question here from someone who, let's see, this is Katie, who says, last year she qualified for a subsidy. She's worried she will not qualify this year. Her income is $23,000.
She should, if, I don't know if she's a single individual that has children, but I think it's worth going into healthcare.gov or calling a navigator to work through that, because I suspect that she will qualify for the subsidy for the tax credit.
Yeah, $23,000. I mean, just to remind everyone, what are the income limits for qualifying for some kind of tax cut? Or excuse me, so, I did it myself.
Tax credit.
Yeah.
So it depends on the size of your family. And so for an individual, a person making up to about $48,000 will be eligible for financial assistance. So if you are an individual making $23,000, I would definitely come in, check it out and see if you're eligible, because you should be. But there are other factors that can be at play. Family of four, you're going to get up to $90,000 for income. So if you're looking at a $23,000 income and your household is larger than one, you're even more likely to be eligible for financial assistance. And so a lot of people who I've talked to who have come in didn't think they would be eligible for assistance and were really surprised and frankly thrilled to find out that they were, and that meant that they had affordable options they didn't expect.
Yeah, but that goes exactly to what Lynn was talking about earlier. $23,000, I mean, just the little I know about this, I thought to myself, okay, well, that would seem to qualify right off the bat. But she questioned whether, and that's probably because of all the news swirling around this as to what's available and what's not. Let's take a phone call from Ruth in Lancaster. Ruth, you're on the air.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
And thank you for this call.
Thank you.
I'm wondering, is there a navigator with whom I could spend some time speaking? Our family is not eligible for subsidies of any kind. My husband is 60. I am 59. And the premiums for this year will now be going to between $3,800 and $4,000 a month, with $5,000 per person deductible, which is, quite frankly, absolutely unaffordable at this point in time. And the bronze plans for our family don't work. And I'm kind of stuck between a rock and a hard place here.
Well, I have to say, Ruth, you may be exactly what we were talking about just a few minutes ago. Let me keep you on the line. How can Ruth and her family contact a navigator and work through this?
Well, we happen to have a navigator who often meets with people in Lancaster, so that would work out well. Our phone number is 855-274-5626, and it'll ask you what region of the state you're in, and Lancaster's central Pennsylvania. So press that number and you'll get our office.
Did you get the number, Ruth?
I did. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you very much. We'll put that number on our website as well. Jeff, and actually he's from Baltimore, must be driving through the area, said he's heard that 8 out of 10 people get subsidies. They have an average income and get zero. He's saying their family have an average income and get zero in subsidies. His premium will increase from $750 to $1,000, and I'm assuming he's talking about a monthly. What is the income limit for a couple? You kind of touched on this.
Sure. So I'll admit I only pulled it for an individual of four, but if it's $48,000 for an individual and about $90,000 for a family of four, I'd guess you'd be in the 60s for a couple of two. But we could certainly follow up and get exactly that number. But once again, if you are in Baltimore and looking at the Maryland Exchange, the income limits are the same. But I don't know a lot about the plan offerings or premiums in that area.
You know, he brings up a good point. State to state, how much does this vary?
You know, it varies a lot. I mean, the cost of health care, the insurance options available, the number of carriers, competition, provider dynamics, all can be very different. And this year, also how states dealt with that lack of cost-sharing reduction funding is different. While most states went with the, we call it silver loading, the strategy that I talked about earlier, not all states did, and some did a little bit differently. So it can look different, but many of them are similar.
We have an email from Mike who says, please talk about the consequences of not having health insurance than having a medical emergency. You will be treated, but it's not free. You could have thousands of dollars on your credit report for many years.
Yeah, that is absolutely right. And that's what we, you know, that's the equation for consumers who are considering whether or not to purchase coverage that they have to make, which is not just the healthcare needs that they expect to have throughout the coming year, but the healthcare needs that they could unfortunately have if something bad happens. And, you know, I've had just personally people in my life who thought they were healthy, younger people in their 30s who got either an extreme cancer diagnosis or a horrible accident, had over $1 million of healthcare bills within a year. Now, both of those people were privileged to have insurance coverage, but if they hadn't, it would have been absolutely devastating. And that's the equation that you have to think about.
We have an email here from Mike, who is an insurance broker in Schaeferstown. He says, with insurance companies filing and seeking 5 to 20% increases in individual plans, why did the Pennsylvania Insurance Department approve much higher increases in some cases?
Sure. So this year, that was because as we were approving increases, we had to account for the Trump administration's decision not to make those cost-sharing reduction payments. So the filing we additionally received earlier in the summer did not account for that and did not account for the additional cost. And we had to account for that to make sure we continued to have insurance companies offering coverage in the market and plans available to all of Pennsylvania's consumers.
He also says, with ACA mandates impacting all costs, insurance companies are no longer paying insurance agents commissions on new individual products. As an agent, I feel strongly that we know our clients best, as well as company products. Any consideration for allowing agents to charge a fee similar to funding for navigators? I will not continue working for free.
Sure. I mean, that has come up. It's a decision really for the Pennsylvania legislature. It's currently against the law for an agent or broker who works with an insurance company to charge a fee. So there has been some discussion of that. Certainly, agents and brokers do a wonderful job helping folks enroll in all types of coverage. And I know that has been an issue, and we'll continue to see what we can do to have really everybody we can helping people enroll, navigators, agents, brokers, etc.
He has a third question that could have an impact on a lot of people. He says, what happens next year when the one remaining carrier in the marketplace here in Lebanon County, Geisinger, decides not to offer marketplace plans? What options would uninsured have when no plans are offered in a marketplace? This is something that has happened across the country.
Well, actually, it is something that has been talked about Bexar counties, but there is no Bexar county in the United States for this year. So it is not officially happened.
Not one this year.
You know what I will say is my number one priority as sort of the regulator of this market is to make sure that all consumers in Pennsylvania, regardless of where they live, have options on the exchange. And so, you know, all I'll say is I'm going to do everything I can to make sure that that does not happen, because we need carriers offering on the marketplace in order for consumers to access the subsidies and the cost-sharing reductions that make coverage affordable for those it might not otherwise be. So that would be a really devastating circumstance for many people, and we're going to do everything we can to make sure that does not happen.
So, Lynn, as a navigator, when you're coming down to the last week, now we've done this for several years, what is the last week like? I mean, are you bombarded with people? 168,000 people were consistent with other years, but there's only a week to go.
Right. I am very concerned, like Jessica said earlier, that not everybody is aware that that's the deadline. If people bombard us, that's fine. You know, we expect that to happen. We hope that will happen so that we can get as many people enrolled as possible. But it would take a lot to get 300,000
over 400,000 by the end of open enrollment.
Yeah,
last year.
It would be hard for that many people to get enrolled unless they're doing it themselves. I mean, a lot of people call us, they're on the computer, and we can offer them help over the phone so that they finish the process themselves. And I expect we'll get a lot of that next week. But I think the most important thing, don't worry about how busy navigators are. Just get yourself enrolled, whether with a navigator or without, so that you have insurance coverage. I'm afraid we're going to get calls after the 15th, and people are going to say they want to enroll or re-enroll, and we'll have to say, I'm sorry.
You have to wait till next year.
Yes.
Yeah. And, you know, something, Commissioner, that you brought up earlier when the rates were decided upon was the great unknown from the Trump administration, the federal government. There still are some unknowns. In fact, we'll be talking with Senator Casey here in just a few minutes about this tax overhaul plan. And part of that is that they're debating in the conference committee, is whether the individual mandate, the mandate that everyone must have health insurance, whether that survives or not. So what can you, as the insurance commissioner, what can the state do? What can Pennsylvania do with that unknown? How do you prepare for that?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, it's important to note that the tax reform, even if it went forward in its current form, it repeals the individual mandate for 2019.
Okay.
And so for the plans that folks are enrolling in now for this open enrollment, for this tax filing season, the individual mandate is still here. The penalty that could come along with not having coverage is still here. It also means that our plans are appropriately priced and don't account for the full repeal of that mandate. So this year, it doesn't change anything. Next year, it's a big concern. And I think we know, based on analysis done by the nonpartisan Congressional Budget Office, that repealing the individual mandate will result in less people having insurance coverage and prices going up for those that do. And so that's the fear, and we're hoping that that doesn't happen.
We have an email here from a listener who says, and we do get some individual questions, and I think these are helpful to answer, especially because most people or many people don't have an opportunity to ask these kind of questions, wants to know how she gets insurance for her son. Her son is disabled. He used to be covered on her plan, but now she needs to find coverage for him. I'm assuming that's the 26 that he's become over 26 years old. She had a company call her, but she wasn't sure that they were legitimate. I mean, how do you go about it? Someone in this situation looking for insurance for a child for the first time, and a disabled child at that, how does someone go about it?
Well, I'd suggest they get a navigator to help them work through that, because we can talk about disability payments, too, as well as insurance.
Exactly. And I do, just because you brought up that marketing, we always caution consumers to make sure they understand what they're buying and from who. We have seen there are plans out there that aren't meant to replace health insurance coverage. They're meant to be short-term or partial. They don't cover catastrophic benefits. They can still exclude your pre-existing conditions, those types of plans. And unfortunately, we have seen some cases where folks are marketing those in a really dishonest way and sort of presenting them like they are something that they're not. And we have seen those complaints. We are able to take action. So make sure you know where you're buying, what you're buying. The best way to do that, healthcare.gov, pa.checkbook.org, both only have plans that are fully compliant with the ACA, have all those benefits and protections. Or you can call one of the five insurers who offer on Pennsylvania's Marketplace, Highmark, Independence, Capital, Geisinger, UPMC, directly to get those plans. If you're going through another route, make sure you ask, is this Affordable Care Act compliant? Will I have to pay a tax penalty? Does it cover my pre-existing conditions? If there's specific benefits you need, make sure you ask all the questions, because we don't want to see consumers thinking they have coverage, needing coverage, only then to find out that they don't. And we have seen that.
Great advice. I'm sure that's on your website as well.
Yes. And please, if you see that, if you are one of the consumers who has found yourself in that situation, or even just had marketing that you think is questionable, contact my department, insurance.pa.gov. We do investigate those situations.
Pennsylvania's acting insurance commissioner, where am I at here? Okay, yeah, Jessica Altman and Lynn Keltz, a healthcare navigator. I want to thank both of you for being with us today.
Thank you.
You're listening to Smart Talk on WITF, your home for NPR News and all things regional. I'm Scott Lamar.
Smart Talk is supported by Capital Blue Cross, providing healthcare coverage accepted by doctors and specialists in all 50 states. More information is available at capbluecross.com. Capital Blue Cross, live fearless. Smart Talk is also supported by UPMC Pinnacle, who has offered transapical mitral valve repair procedures for more than 3 years and currently serves as a trial site for over 50 clinical trials. Information at upmcpinnacle.com/myheart.
Welcome back to Smart Talk. The Republican-controlled Senate passed the tax overhaul bill in the early hours of Saturday morning. The bill would give a permanent tax break to corporations, a temporary, in some case, tax break to individual filers. Joining us to discuss his opposition to the bill is Pennsylvania U.S. Senator Bob Casey. Senator Casey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Scott. Good to be with you. Thank you.
So let me start off with the basic question, Senator. What don't you like about the tax overhaul?
Well, it's a long list, but first and foremost, I think it's a giveaway to the super rich, and a giveaway also to huge multinational corporations. And when you have that much of a giveaway in both instances, you foreclose the possibility of giving a truly unprecedented or at least substantial middle class tax cut. It's just there's only so much revenue. And that's the tragedy here, is the middle class could have done a lot better, and we could have grown the economy as a result of that, because you put more money in the pockets of the middle class, the economy grows. But they, the Republican majority, chose not to do that.
And we're going to talk about all those things. So, but I just want to kind of backtrack on something you just said. So you don't necessarily oppose a tax cut or legislation that would cut taxes. It's this bill you don't like.
Yeah, there was certainly, I voted for tax cuts before. I've also voted for tax increases. But in this case, there was a huge opportunity because the last time that the United States Congress did this was 31 years ago. So this opportunity to give the middle class a substantial tax cut, to give help to corporations, but also to grow parts of the tax code that help families grow and help children. The earned income tax credit, the child tax credit, this was a big opportunity, maybe for the only time in the next 10, 20, or 30 years, to turbocharge efforts to lift kids out of poverty, to grow the middle class. And so it's really about helping the middle, but also those trying to get to the middle and having a better workforce down the road. And unless you have a strategy for children, and I know some people don't think of that in the tax code, but it's already there. Why not grow these strategies like the child tax credit strategy by using the tax credit and the earned income tax credit? Why not use this opportunity to really make a breakthrough and have a transformative impact on those families in the middle or trying to get to the middle? Instead, they dedicated $1.3 trillion, and that's with a T, to big corporations. Now, I'd certainly sit down and work with any Republican that wanted to give a corporate tax cut, but my God, did it have to go down to 20% at all costs? And that became a real point of contention. It's one thing to give our corporations a tax cut to be more competitive. It's another thing to spend $1.3 trillion and make it impossible to give the middle the kind of cut that they should get. I think also that for your listeners, one of the best places to go to look at the analysis is the so-called Tax Policy Center, TPC. And you can see in there the most recent report. It was just issued this Monday, based upon the Senate tax bill, was that, if you look at just two income groups, 50,000 to 87,000, versus the 750 and up, which is really the top 1%. So if you're between 50,000 and 80,000, 87,000, in 2019 you're getting a 1.4% tax cut, which is a tax cut. But the top 1%, people making 750 grand a year and up, they're getting 1.8. So they're already ahead of you by 0.4. And then in 2025, 6 years later, they're a full point ahead of you. The 50 to 87 gets 1.3. The top 1% gets 2.3. So the top 1% does better in 19 than that 50 to 87,000 dollar taxpayer or household, and they do better in 2025. And I don't even want to talk about what happens in 2027, because that's when people get a lot of people's tax cut goes away, or in many cases, taxes go up. So you have millions of people that are getting a pittance, very little, and in some cases getting a tax increase. In fact, by one estimate, that category, the category between 50,000 and 100,000, you've got millions. By one estimate, more than 8.4 million people that either get an increase, a tax increase, in 2019, or their tax cut is $100 or less. Millions and millions of people. So when Republicans said over and over again, every income category gets a tax break, that's technically correct. What they don't want to talk about are all the people that got such a low tax cut, such a small pittance compared to the top 1%. And they also, of course, didn't want to talk about the people that will have their taxes go up, have a tax increase in 2019 and several years after.
Let me talk a little bit more about that, Senator. Fairness aside, it's difficult to have. You can't have this conversation without talking about tax fairness. But Our economy is based on consumer spending. No matter where the money is coming from, whether it's from the top or the middle class, middle incomes, I should say, if there's money being put back into the economy in the form of consumer spending, doesn't that help the economy overall?
There's no question, but the problem is, I think, the premise of what you asserted, which is that no matter where you give it, it's going to get back to the economy. I think the evidence is pretty fairly overwhelming that the best way to do that is to put those dollars in the hands of the middle class or people trying to get to the middle class. One colleague of mine said, why do we have a middleman for the middle class? Meaning, given these huge corporate tax breaks, and then you have the president asserting in a White House Council of Economic Advisors report, which is much criticized and even undermined, where they're talking about all this, some big increase in wages. So we had several amendments that spoke to the idea that if you're saying that big multinational corporations are going to raise wages, where the evidence shows otherwise, then why don't you make it law that if wages don't go up, you get to claw back the corporate tax cut? Because if you're asserting that, you ought to be able to prove it. And the other problem with the assertion that somehow giving the corporations is going to help everybody is that a lot of corporations have already announced that they're going to give this back in terms of dividends to shareholders or stock buybacks, or God help us, maybe executive increases or bonuses. But at least they're willing to admit on the record that this will go to stock buybacks and dividends and not to wages. Now, they've got to get their story straight on the Republican side. Either companies are going to give this back in wages or not, and there's very little to no evidence, even currently, not based upon some study of the past, even currently, that they're... And by the way, I read on the floor a Bloomberg story from last week, or parts of it, where Jack Bogle, the head of Vanguard, not some liberal Democrat, he said that corporate profits as a percent of GDP have never been higher since they started measuring it 2019. So big corporations are doing quite well, and wage earners are not. Wage earners haven't had much of a raise in years, if not decades. By one estimate, 40 years of 11% wage growth in a country where after World War II, our wage growth went up 91%. So we need a strategy in the tax code, in the budget, in everything we do to raise wages. And frankly, both parties have to do more to raise wages. This tax bill was a golden opportunity to inject into the code, or to grow provisions of the code that would raise wages, lift kids out of poverty, and ultimately grow the economy and ensure we have a strong workforce. But I think a lot of that potential or opportunity is going to be lost if this bill goes through.
We're going to talk more about the corporate tax rate and corporate taxes in just a moment. You're listening to Smart Talk on WITF, your home for NPR News and all things regional. I'm Scott Lamar. We're speaking with Pennsylvania U.S. Senator Bob Casey, a Democrat, of course, here from Pennsylvania, about the tax overhaul plan. Probably going to get into a couple other issues with Senator Casey here in a few minutes. If you have a question or a comment, give us a call, 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. You can leave a question or a comment on WITF's Facebook page. On Twitter, we are at smarttalkwitf. Again, that phone number, 1-800-729-7532. Senator Casey, you said early on that we've said several times, that this is a perfect opportunity for a tax overhaul. It has been 31 years. There's a big difference, yeah, though, between what happened in 1985 and was enacted in 1986 and what's happening this time. But, you know, there are some. I had Republican Congressman Lloyd Smucker of Lancaster County on yesterday, who also said that this is a perfect time. But there are some who say that not really, because the economy is going very well right now. You know, it started a few years ago during the Obama administration, has continued to grow, have a low unemployment rate. The stock market is going gangbusters. So why mess with what's working right now?
Well, no, that's actually a really good question. My point was not that this is a perfect time for tax reform. My point was, if you're going to go down this road, as Republicans chose to do, you've got to use that opportunity to do everything you can for the middle class, and also, in my judgment, I would argue for this, is to use it as an opportunity to lift families and especially children out of poverty. You could have a transformative impact, and you can't do that in a regular tax bill. You can't do that in a regular year-to-year budget opportunity. Look, the way to do this would be to sit down and have months and months and months, many months of hearings, at least some number of hearings that were comparable to what they did in the mid-80s. But unfortunately, what you had here was we got a tax bill in the Finance Committee on a Thursday, and for the next couple of days, we were able to ask questions of the tax counsel, but we didn't have the exhaustive hearings from different points of view. For example, if I said the increase in the child tax credit should be X, that you could have child advocates who know the tax code and know a lot about children and the impact of the tax credit, and they could come in and advocate for my position. Then you could have a Republican witness who'd say, no, you shouldn't do that, here's why. And then you could have a hearing just on that. You could have a hearing on should the corporate rate be cut from 35 to 20 or 35 to 22 or 35 to 25. What is it? And have a lot of back and forth. That corporate tax cut alone should have been the subject of several weeks of hearings, just that question. And it just didn't happen. There weren't any hearings. There wasn't a single hearing on the first version of the Senate bill, the second version, the third version, the handwritten or the handwritten annotated version that ultimately became the bill. We had handwriting in the margin, which actually went into the record, which is really disturbing.
Does that happen so often? I'm
not sure it's ever happened. Oh. But the process, look, the process isn't interesting to talk about. The process matters. You're less likely to make mistakes if you have a long process. You can litigate or debate these issues. And that just didn't happen. I think that there was a way to do this in a bipartisan fashion, and it just it didn't happen. One thing I wanted to read verbatim, because I said it before, I want to make sure I read it accurately. I mentioned Jack Bogle, the founder of Vanguard, who's a man who's made a lot of money and a mutual fund expert, probably the world's expert. But here's what he said about corporate profits. Quote, this is Jack Bogle in a story in Bloomberg from last week. Quote, corporate profits after taxes last year were the highest they've ever been in the history of GDP going back to 1929. And then he goes on to say individual wages are at the lowest level in about 15 years as a percent of GDP, unquote. So his point was corporate profits are pretty good. Now, look, I've heard from a lot of CEOs, and they say, well, that might be true, but we're not competitive, and we got to lower the rate. And I get all that, and I think there could have been a bipartisan corporate tax cut that a lot of people on the Democratic side could have bought into. But we never really had a debate or a compelling argument presented. At least I never heard it as to why it had to be 20% at all costs. What's the magic of that number? I know they say it'd be. It would catch up to other countries, so-called OECD countries and similarly situated countries and all that. But corporate profits are high, and the top 1% has never done better probably in human history than they've done since 1980. One other number for you is the richest 1% have seen their share of national income roughly double since 1980. So in 1980, the top 1% had 11% of national income. Now they have 20. They have 20% of national income. So why do they need another tax cut? I would say take every penny of the tax cut for the top 1% and give that to the middle class. Why not? Why do they need a tax cut? Tell me why. Mm. People say, oh, well, they pay a lot of taxes. Well, fine. They've got a pretty good tax rate right now. And they've been getting a good tax rate since 1980, if you're in the top 1%. And I know I'm offending people, but, you know, that's tough beans. I mean, the top 1% doesn't need a lobbyist. they should help the country, and I think a lot of them are willing to do that. But Republicans seem to be obsessed with making sure the top 1% gets more help beyond what they've gotten since 1980. And according to Tax Policy Center, in the first year, 2019, they get a 1.8% tax cut, $28,000, which grows to $47,000 a year in 2025. And the people making between $50,000 and $87,000 get 1.4 and then 1.3. So they're getting a lot less dollars, but they're also getting a lot less of a percentage when it comes to measuring a tax cut in after-tax income.
Let's take a phone call from Blaine in York. Blaine, you're on the air.
Hi. Thank you, Congressman, or Senator, for your vote. I appreciate that you did not vote for this tax cut. My big question here, the Supreme Court has stated that corporations are people. So why do we still have two tax codes? I'm a seasonal tax preparer. I'd love to see us have one flat rate for everybody. Corporations make it a profit tax with no loss carryover, just like they do in Pennsylvania. And individuals, anything above the poverty level, tax it, and nothing is no IRAs, no 401ks. You make it, you pay it.
Hey, thank you very much for your call, Senator. Just to add to what he was saying, the Supreme Court calling corporations people, that was when applied to the First Amendment as far as freedom of speech. But his point is, and he mentioned a flat tax. What about that?
Well, I think the gentleman's name is Blaine. I'd say these kinds of ideas should be debated in the Senate Finance Committee and the House Ways and Means Committee when it comes to tax policy, and that's why you have a process that where you can debate that or litigate it, and then try to arrive at a consensus position. And if you can't, then sometimes bills have to go in a partisan direction after attempts to arrive at consensus. But my point is that it didn't even happen in this case. And I mean, just on the basic approach to tax policy, yes, we should simplify. Yes, we've got to make it fairer. But in terms of, I've never favored a flat tax, but I think there are plenty of ways to make the code simpler and fairer. And I think a lot of Republicans agree with me on that. We just never got to a point where there was an attempt. It'd be one thing if Republicans said, okay, we're going to have exhaustive hearings. We're going to give Democrats and Republicans a chance to work together. But if it doesn't happen, then at the end of the process, we're going to come together as Republicans and have a bill. It might be partisan, but at least we tried. In this case, they didn't even put in place the process to try it. So it's being rammed through the Senate. It'll be rammed through the House, and they could sign it into law. It could be signed into law by the end of the year.
Okay, so and we've gotten a couple questions from listeners about this. These bills have passed both the House and Senate, and they're in conference committee right now. Do you, as the minority party, Democrats, have any say in this?
Yeah, it's very limited. We can offer. We had a chance to offer amendments in committee and then on the floor. But again, usually when you're offering amendments of something this consequential, you have not just amendments, but a lot of debate that kind of undergirds or is the foundation for those amendments. So it's a very limited opportunity. And of course, every amendment we offered in the committee, Republicans voted against. I'm not sure there was a single Republican that voted for a single Democratic amendment. I could be wrong about one or two, but I think it's entirely possible that every one of them voted against every single amendment.
At this point, if constituents from across the country contacted their congressperson or their senator and said, I'm either for or I'm against these bills, mm-hmm. would it have any impact?
I think it always does. I don't think there's any question. I think on healthcare, we proved this year that, that, for example, on the debate about Medicaid, I think a lot of Republicans felt the heat from from their constituents about Medicaid. They didn't want to decimate the Medicaid program or get rid of Medicaid expansion. And I think the country, we all found out this year that Medicaid is not a them program, it's an us program. A lot of our families are affected by it. Almost every middle-class family has trouble paying for nursing home, the full cost of nursing home care. When you spend down and you run out of money, guess who picks up the tab in all those instances? A lot of middle-class families benefit from Medicaid in the nursing home context. A lot of families with a child with a disability, low-income people, high-income people, benefit from Medicaid if they have a child with a disability, especially if it's a profound disability where they need a lot of therapies, treatment, services. And then, of course, kids in rural areas and small towns and urban areas get the benefit of Medicaid. A lot of people work at hospitals across Pennsylvania. We've got, by one estimate, the job category that includes healthcare has 1 million people working in it. And a lot of people working in rural hospitals realize that, my goodness, if Medicaid is badly cut or undermined, our hospital won't just cut back, they'll close, and you'd have massive job loss across Pennsylvania. So what I mean by that is there was a building up of the argument on why cutting Medicaid, as Republicans proposed, was a mistake. And I think that was one of the reasons why the ultimate repeal vote was not successful.
Senator,
I would hope, my preference would be to have the tax bill not pass and then have a new process to consider it.
Senator, I only have about 30 seconds left. The federal government runs out of money tomorrow. President Trump suggested there could be a government shutdown. Will there be in 30 seconds or less?
I don't think any president should ever advocate for or predict there's going to be a government shutdown. It's his obligation and the majority party's obligation to make sure this doesn't happen. And I don't think it'll shut down. And we still have a lot of work to do if there's an extension between now and 2 weeks from now.
Senator Robert Casey, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Casey. Coming up on tomorrow's program, a documentary that follows a central Pennsylvania woman for a year after she was released from prison. We'll be talking with Katie Culinary from WHYY, who produced that documentary, and hear from the woman herself. It's a really good piece.
Smart Talk is produced by WITF as part of our mission to deliver relevant, high-quality programming. Support comes from Capital Blue Cross, which shares WITF's commitment to being a trusted resource in our communities. Capital Blue Cross, live fearless. Smart Talk is also supported by UPMC Pinnacle. Its 11 principal investigators and 12 nurse coordinators conduct research efforts to advance cardiovascular medicine. Information at upmcpinnacle.com/myheart.